Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'll welcome you here to our Wednesday, October 21st business meeting, which I will now call to order. We do have other board members here in the government center, and I'm expecting a full crew. I will go ahead, board members, and give the invocation to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, if all will rise. Father in heaven, we're thankful for the opportunity to serve the citizens of Loudoun County. We pray this day as we gather for this business meeting that we will have wisdom to be with us, to be able to make the decisions that are necessary to continue this county to move forward and to help benefit our residents here in Loudoun. We're very grateful for our first responders and who serve us so dutifully and to protect us. And we're also grateful for all our employees who put in a great effort to keep up with the agenda that we have set as a board. And we again ask that thou will bless our military men and women who are in harm's way, that they may be protected and be able to be home soon with their loved ones. And this we pray in the name of thy Son. Amen.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, board members, we sent out some suggested ads to the consent agenda, and I will just read at this time what I believe we've all kind of agreed to. The first item is appointments, item 1A for confirmations. Item number 2, administrative items report of October 21st, 2015. Item number 5, curb ramps and crosswalks on Sugarland Run Drive in the Sugarland Run subdivision. Item number 6, installation of traffic calming measures in the Glen Heather subdivision. Item number 7, installation of traffic calming measures in the Kilpatrick Farm subdivision. Item number 9, state revenue sharing reallocation to the Woods Road. Item number 10, ZOAM 2015-0006, resolution of intent to amend the revised 1993 Loudoun County zoning ordinance, rural uses and standards and historic structure exemption. Item number 11, recusal process for Board of Supervisors, committees, and commissions. Item number 13, board member initiative, which is craft beverages, zoning ordinance amendments, strategic plan. Item number 14, Woodland Road Industrial Park on street parking. From the Finance, Government Services, and Operations Committee, 15A, contract renewal operation for the youth shelter facility. 15B, contract award, construction of Croson Lane. 15C, contract renewal, engineering services for stormwater infrastructure and general land surveying. 15D, contract award, Western Bramilton District Park Improvement Services. 15E, award authority increase, on-call roadway transportation design services. 15F, contract renewal, commissioning services. Item 15H, resolution authorizing the issuance of lease revenue bonds through the Economic Development Authority. Item number 15I, proposed amendments to the codified ordinance of Loudoun County, Chapter 856.01, persons subject to tax, Chapter 856.03, mixed beverages license tax, assessment of tax payment, and Chapter 856.04, penalty for delinquency. Item 15J, request from the Town of Leesburg for funding an additional resource officer at the Douglas School. 15K, domestic violence utility review team process. Item R1, resolution recognizing Diwali holiday 2015. Item R2, resolution in support of the regional blanket winter coat drive for the Syrian and Iraqi refugees fleeing violence in the Middle East. And that about covers the whole meeting. But Mr. Bona has made a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Bonfels. And discussion on the motion, Mr. Higgins.
Mr. Chairman, I do have one question about item 13, and I'd like to maybe address that to Supervisor Bruner. What is the, what currently is the zoning in Ashburn? Is that, what do they call that, rural commercial? Is that
rural,
what
it is? RC, correct.
So that would apply to other areas as well, if they're going to go forward.
We limited this, if I may,
yes, Mr. Chairman. Yes, Mr. Bruner.
We limited this item to the suburban area of the county when we brought it forward last time. So this only applies in the urban, suburban. It does not apply in rural areas.
Well, I'd actually like to see them consider the rural areas. Can we?
Mr. Higgins, given the reason this is coming forward, I would not go there because it will delay what is trying to be accomplished at this point. If you're wanting to look at do something else, then I think that is something that ought to come up at the first of the year.
Okay.
All right. Other discussion? Seeing Mr. Delgadio.
Just wanted to again thank the chair and thank Supervisor Bono for taking care of the area of Woodland Road. This is an area that we've had people come in for various attention, various shortcomings that are perceived there. It's an industrial area, but the county staff and VDOT have cooperated in that the type of roadway that's there on the main drag, Woodland Road, is similar to Davis and Glen and the other industrial areas that surround Sterling and the area that Chairman York is actually, it's his neighborhood. These areas have gotten special attention on the main primary roads, but not on the secondary roads. So the secondary roads of those areas are similar to this, and so I appreciate very much the effort to recognize that we've got more than those main roads there that crisscross the industrial area. Thank you.
All right. Further discussion on a motion. Mr. Bona.
Yes, thank you. Just want to clarify two things on item 14, which is the Woodland Road Industrial Park that Supervisor Delgadio just mentioned. The item is a little confusing because it says the fiscal impact is between about 1.4 and 1.6 million. That impact is something the board already approved previously in a different item. That was an item to bring the board, these particular roads up to the standards because the county is responsible for maintenance right now. We want to turn these roads over to VDOT. So the amounts under fiscal impact are really not germane to this item. All we're doing with this item is limiting parking to one side of those roads, given the fact that two vehicles can't get through at the same time, given the parking on them today. So there is no fiscal impact for this particular item tonight. As far as item 13 goes, Supervisor Higgins, we have a specific opportunity to revitalize certain portions of Old Ashburn, and that developer who owns those properties already has an anchor tenant, and both the developer and the anchor tenant's financing is contingent upon us accomplishing this ZOAM to bring them in. And so I brought this, I was going to try to do it through a ZMOD, but staff informed me I could not do a ZMOD, so I had to actually bring a ZOAM to accomplish this. But we have a targeted specific prospect, and that's the reason that I brought this item on and I wanted to accelerate in the strategic plan because it is extremely easy and fast ZOAM that we can get done in a very short amount of time. Thank you.
Further discussion on the motion, Mr. Letourneau.
Yeah, just to add also for background, the original was a joint with Supervisor Bone and I. Supervisor Clark had requested very, very adamantly that only the suburban policy area be allowed in this, and so as a compromise, we accepted that. So perhaps there can be a discussion there as well if you wish to pursue it.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion will carry 801 with Ms. Clark absent for the vote. Are there any requests for additions or deletions to the agenda? Board members, I do have one that I want to bring up at the end, and it's regarding a matter with the toll, I-66 inside the Beltway and enforcement. With that, let us go ahead and move on. I have no comments at this time, so I'll turn the time over to Mr. Hemstreet if he has any comments.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have four comments tonight. The first is that
Loudoun County election officials remind everyone that extended hours for in-person absentee voting will begin Saturday, October 24th. Voters may cast their absentee ballots at the Office of Elections on Miller Drive in Leesburg, the Cascade Senior Center, and then also at the Dulles South Multipurpose Center. More information, including directions to the voting locations and the hours of operation, can be found online at loudoun.gov/election2015. Second, anyone interested in learning about the application process for the Loudoun County Community Development Block Grant Program is encouraged to attend an informative workshop on Friday, November 6th at 1 p.m. at the Shenandoah Building in Leesburg. Proposed projects to address the goals of the CDBG program, including affordable housing opportunities, revitalizing neighborhoods, and expanding economic development opportunities. More information is online at loudoun.gov/CDBG. Third, with the ending of daylight savings time a little more than a week away, Loudoun County fire officials remind us that when we set our clocks back 1 hour on November 1st, we should check the batteries in our smoke alarms. Also, Loudoun County has a free smoke alarm installation program. More information is online at loudoun.gov/smoke alarms. And then finally, as part of Domestic Violence Awareness Month, the Loudoun County Domestic Abuse Response Team is encouraging everyone to wear purple-colored clothing tomorrow, Thursday, October 22nd. Purple symbolizes the courage, persistence, and commitment to end domestic violence. More information about efforts to prevent domestic violence in Loudoun County is online at loudoun.gov/DART. Those are my comments this evening, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you very much. We do have one information item. It is significant incident reports. This from the Sheriff's Office, I believe, this evening. And we have Lieutenant Colonel Buckman with us. And, sir, I will turn the time over to you for a brief briefing.
Good afternoon. I believe everybody got the handout. Statistics-wise, our crime and our trends have been pretty steady across the board. We do have some increases in Western Loudoun, mainly due to a large destruction of property issue we had with juveniles and BB guns. We had about 66 cases. Those cases have been solved. We've also had a number of arrests, about 85 total, a large proportion of those for possession of heroin and our heroin initiative have been in the western end on some of the trafficking routes between Western Loudoun and West Virginia, Frederick and Baltimore. And the last increase in the west was on grand larceny cases, which were up about 10, but due to the low numbers, it's a fairly high percentage increase. The major crimes that we've had, we have had one homicide down in Sterling of a juvenile. It did receive a large case, large amount of publicity. One juvenile was taken into custody, 17 years old, charged with first-degree murder, use of a firearm, and the commission of a felony. And two adults were also charged with accessory to homicide and possession of a firearm by an illegal alien. That case actually is still under investigation, but the three arrests were made within 24 hours. So it was a group effort by our detectives, Northern Virginia Gang Task Force, Virginia State Police, Fairfax County Police also offered some assistance. The July home invasion on Sawyer Square in Ashburn has also been solved. Two of the suspects were local. One was from Dumfries, was picked up by Prince William County, and one was from Chicago, was arrested in Chicago by Chicago police. That was a targeted home invasion. That was not a random act. We also had a jogger attacked area of Riverside Parkway and Kidd Park Drive. That is also actively under investigation. I was just talking to Chief Price. Leesburg had some similar incidents, but we're not sure if they're related. There is some information in that case that we're working on. The last major event with arrest was burglary cases in the University Station and Dulles South service areas. That's also a case we work with Fairfax County, serial burglar. A subject from Sugar Land Run was arrested. We charged him with four counts of burglary, four counts of grand larceny, and one count of possession of a firearm by a convicted felon. And a couple of those burglaries were actually at night in occupied residences, which is very rare for us. With those explanations, I'll take any questions that you have or if you need any further detail on any of the statistics.
Very good. Appreciate it. Any questions at this time? All right. Thank you very much. We appreciate the report. Keep up the good work. Board members, I apologize. I didn't see it on my agenda, and we need to make sure it gets on there next time. But we do have the 4 o'clock session of public input, and we do have 5 members of the public that have signed up to speak, and they each have 2 minutes to speak. And our first speaker is Dwayne Ellis, to be followed by Bethany Ingersoll. And we would ask, when you come forward, just please state your name for the public record. Anyone.
Yeah. I'm Dwayne Ellis. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Dwayne Ellis. I'm here today as an owner and concerned citizen about not a zoning issue, but an issue with your codified ordinance, which allows for actual unbridled access to firing of legal firearms throughout the county. There's a property owner who lives at the corner. His house does not adjoin mine, but it's very close to mine. And he has just constructed a private firing range in his backyard. That firing range, depending on how you adjust it, what your line of sight is, it's something about 400 feet from the patio of my home. And unfortunately for me, the firing range is oriented to be firing in my direction, right at the side of my house. So I'm here really today, not, again, I'm not here to talk about a zoning issue because there is no zoning in the county. I come to find out there is no zoning that regulates private, you know, private firearms ranges. So really what I'm here to talk about is section 684.03, and in your package you'll see that I have given you 2 pages of that chapter from the codified ordinance, which says that in essence, as long as you're 50 feet from a roadway and 100 feet from an occupied dwelling, you can shoot as much as often as heavy a caliber. You can basically do whatever you'd like. There's no restriction whatsoever, as I understand it. I've also, in your packet, provided you with some names of people that I've addressed from, you know, public safety people, both from the county, from the zoning administration, et cetera, et cetera. So my question really is not the legality of this range. It's how in the world does this person have the right, his right, to fire a gun, supersede my right to live quiet and peaceful enjoyment in my own home? This is what I don't understand.
Mr. Ellis, I apologize, but your time is up.
My time is up? Okay.
But it's something we will look into and
all right.
See. Thank you. Our next speaker is Bethany Ingersoll, to be followed by Daniel Ingersoll.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Bethany Ingersoll. I am actually the property owner the property that is adjoining to the property that was just discussed that has constructed the gun range on their property. The gun range is actually about 50 yards from my property line. It is very concerning that a gun range is allowed to be constructed and used in a residential area. We're not speaking about an area that is fields, you know, everywhere. We're talking about 20 homes around this gun range. We're talking about children playing in streets. We're talking about animals. And for it to be acceptable for this gun range to be constructed and used whenever and however the landowner and their guests want to is very concerning. It's very scary. I will tell you, I was at our property when the landowner's wife and an unknown gentleman decided to use the gun range. It is constant firing. It is pow, 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 pow. I mean, it sounds like you're in a war zone. It's scary. It interferes with our right to enjoy our property, our peace and quiet. And I think that the county needs to look into this to ensure that A, it's being used safely, and two, to see if the use can be limited in the future so that the property owner with the gun range is not interfering with the rights of the other property owners in the area and the residents who are trying to enjoy, safely enjoy their properties. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ingersoll. Daniel Ingersoll will be followed by Chris Villa.
My name's Daniel Ingersoll. I actually have a visual handout that I think might be useful for you guys, if that could be passed out. I won't reiterate what the previous two speakers said. I just will say this is, if you could take a look at the visual, you'll see that really the direction of this firing range down, this is not a large property. There's a 6-acre lot and a 4-acre lot. There's a long rectangular shape. The firing range leads directly into Middleburg Downs. You can see on my on our visual that there's 15 to 20 homes in that radius where one accidental discharge or misfire that misses this range, it goes off. Lord knows what's going to happen in that circumstance. So we're very concerned. We're very scared. When we were out there a couple weeks ago, as my wife said, and we heard these shots, really, we got in our car as quickly as possible because we're you know, we don't know what the long-term ramifications of this are, but or what you guys can do. But really, the as Dwayne had mentioned, there's a nuisance statute in the Loudoun County Code, and then there's also an offenses against public safety and peace provision. We've tried to talk to the sheriff's office, the zoning office, Department of Building. Everyone sort of passes the buck. No one really wants to. We get a lot of sympathy about this, but no one's actually taking any action. So whether it's within those two provisions or else or otherwise, we wanted to bring this to the board's attention and see what action could be taken. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ingersoll. Chris Villa to be followed by Elizabeth Ellers.
Good afternoon. My name is Chris Villa. I'm the finance director at Ashby Ponds. Thank you for having me to share. I wanted to talk about an opportunity to support Ashby Ponds as a 501c3 senior living facility located in Ashburn. We're asking you to consider a motion to forward our application for a personal property tax relief to the board for a public hearing. If moved to a public hearing, we assure that the board that if approved, any money that we would be forgiven or any relief would be reinvested in the community and would offset any fees or increases of fees to the residents that are at the community. So just to reinforce, the tax relief would stay at Ashby Ponds. It wouldn't go anywhere else. It would benefit the residents that live there and to their use of Loudoun County. Certainly, the other portion of this is only a relief of the personal property taxes. It's not a request related to the real estate taxes at all. It's about a $50,000 benefit to the community, and that's a significant amount to the residents and to their ongoing costs of running the community. Certainly, Ashby Ponds has invested over $150 million in the county. We have over 500 employees working there. 78% of them live in Loudoun County. We have 1,100 plus residents that live at Ashby Ponds to date. 250 of them are military veterans. More of them are spouses and also government workers. The residents have donated over 25,000 hours of volunteer time in 2014, so almost a $600,000 value. And so certainly we're looking for an opportunity for the seniors at Ashby Ponds, unlike our competitors who don't have to pay personal property tax, to be able to have that and at the same time not provide, you know, additional resources to the county around. Certainly ask you to move that forward to a public hearing.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Mr. Villa. Elizabeth Ellers, to be our concluding speaker for this portion.
Thank you. I'm Elizabeth Ellers. I'm a resident of Aldi and the executive director of Oatlands Historic House and Gardens. I'm here to speak in support of the Finance and Government Services and Operations Committee recommendation of our request for as a nonprofit organization for the property tax exemption. In mid-2014, Oatlands acquired 54 acres adjacent to Oatlands, a property known as Oatlands Hamlet. This property is to our immediate southwest and was originally part of the Carter Land Holdings going back more than 200 years. The acquisition continues the vital preservation efforts surrounding Oatlands Historic Core, begun in 1965 with the donation of the property of the National Trust for Historic Preservation and continued in the 2002 purchase of the Long Meadow Tract, now known as the Smith Preserve. The need to preserve and maintain this land is a central mandate of our mission, and it does two things. First of all, it protects our view shed from development just yards from the historic structures, and it expands our educational and outreach opportunities through additional venues to expand programming and special events. As a 501c3 not-for-profit, Oatlands serves Loudoun County as a historic and cultural center. We offer tours, lectures, school programs, children's camps, and other things. And this tax exemption will let us put more of our limited funds back into these sorts of activities. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Ms. Ellers. And Ms. Ellers was our concluding speaker for this portion of public comment. We will have public comment again later at 6 p.m. Board members, at this time, let us go to item number one, appointments. And are there any nominations? Mr. Bona.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I nominate Mr. Paul Casagrande to the Community Criminal Justice Board.
All right, very good. Are there any others? Okay, seeing none, let's go to item number three, which is our legislative item. All right, Mr. Wiley, welcome.
Good afternoon.
Ed, do you want to just...
Yes, I can kick us off pretty quickly, Mr. Chairman. As you noted, Mr. Roger Wiley is here with us today, can provide some guidance as we move through the package. Your motions start on, I believe, 106 of the iPad, and I will lead you there very quickly. What you can see in the item in front of you today is the way that we have separated the actions of the board in terms of priority initiatives and policy statements, and you can see that the motions are set up in that manner. Priority initiatives are to initiate and pursue specific legislation, while policy statements really infer just that, policy issues that are of importance to the board. Gwen and I can certainly tweak the list as we move forward, but I just wanted you to be aware of how the information is divided. We did provide a motion based on Supervisor Higgins' inquiry into disclosure of zoning of adjacent properties. We also ran into some information about what other jurisdictions are doing with respect to disclosure of agricultural operations. I thought that was very helpful information that Ms. Bowles from Economic Development prepared. We sent that out to the board for your information earlier today. We have the motion on the local public hearing for the State Corporation Commission.
Hold it. We're going to do this one at a time today.
Sure.
With the motion.
So 106.
Okay, 106 on the iPads, page 11 on paper. So, Mr. Higgins, are you wishing to make a motion with respect to item number one?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to move that the Board of Supervisors support or seek legislation that adds to Section 55.519B2 that notifies purchasers of residential properties to exercise due diligence on the zoning classifications or permitted uses of parcels adjacent to the subject parcel.
All right. Motion has been made, seconded by Supervisor Volpe. Discussion. Did you have any opening?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'll be very brief. You know, I've run into over the last few years a lot of misunderstandings with property owners about what the agricultural zoning permits, and I think that I don't know what the answer is, but I think there's a better effort that needs to be made to let them know about the permitted uses around them. I did get an email from the realtors today, and they wanted to talk to me. I'd be glad to talk to them about it and get some ideas from them. I'm not trying to make anything onerous, but I am trying to inform people that buy homes in rural areas that they are, in fact, in a rural area, and there are uses around them that may not be something they're accustomed to in a suburban area.
Okay. Other discussion? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion will carry unanimously. Item number two, State Corporation Commission public hearings. I think that's pretty simple. Ms. Clark, do you have a motion you wish to make?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. I move that the Board of Supervisors seek changes to 56-46.1 of the Code of Virginia to require a local public hearing by request of a local governing body for State Corporation Commission proceedings associated with approval of electrical power line applications.
Second. Motion has been made and seconded by Supervisor Volpe. Do you have an opening you wish to make, Ms. Clark?
I think, Mr. Chairman, the operative word here, the key word here, is to require a local public hearing. As it stands now, we are able to request a local public hearing, but there is no guarantee that we will receive one. So I think this will be very helpful if this does get moved forward in General Assembly and get passed. I also have the broadband motion on the blue paper that is at everyone's desk as well. And that's numbered item three, but number three in the iPad is the NVTC item for Supervisor Reed. So would you like me to move forward with item number three after this motion?
Let's just dispense with this item right now, Ms. Clark. So further discussion on item number two, Mr. Reed?
This is a very good item. I've been in situations in the past where I had to actually fight to get hearings up here and members of the General Assembly. I was wondering if it would be appropriate for a friendly amendment to ask for this for Greenway toll hearings as well.
Would you accept that, Ms. Clark, as a friendly amendment?
I would. I'd be fine with that.
Okay. Let's see. The seconder okay, Ms. Volpe? All right. Mr. Letourneau.
Yeah. Could perhaps, sorry to mess things up, but perhaps we could make it a little less specific because we have other toll issues and we have other SEC issues. So. Why do we have to specify just power lines? What if we just made it any SEC matter before SEC that the...
So if I hear you, Mr. Letourneau, what you're suggesting is that we remove the word electrical power and the Greenway and just make it specific to requesting local hearings for any FCC.
Yeah, we could just, in the motion, after it says for State Corporation Commission proceedings, just stop there. So it doesn't say associated with.
Yeah.
And Mr. Chairman, I would accept that modification. I think that would be all encompassing. We do have a variety of utilities that fall under the SCC governance.
Ms. Volpe will accept that as a second, but I see two people wanting to jump at the mic. So, Mr. Wiley?
Mr. Chairman, this may be fine. I know that we have looked at the specific statute that deals with the electric, the location of electric facilities, and that we know the change that needs to be made to that one. The tolls and the other things might be in different code sections, and so you'd be broadening the bill a good bit. It may be that it's not a problem, but I wouldn't want to promise.
I appreciate where Mr. Letourneau has suggested we go with this, but I do have a concern. There's an awful lot of applications involving the SCC, and that includes medical items and et cetera, and we just have to be careful on this. So I'm going to ask. I'll support the motion, but I think as you're doing the lobbying work for us in Richmond, that we have to allow a little flexibility if it has to dwindle down to a few specific type of hearings. So, okay. Further
closing
discussion?
Comments. Yes, sir. Just closing comment on that. And I can appreciate the volume of SEC proceedings, but I will just remind everyone that this is per our request. So we have the ability to select which ones we would like to request for the public hearing to be here. So look forward to hearing any follow-up if there needs to be additional change in the language.
Sure.
All right. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion will be unanimous. The next one is NVTC. And I see your mic is on, Mr. Wiley. Is there something you wanted to add before we get into this up here?
No, I'm fine on this.
Okay, very good. Mr. Reed, you're bringing us forward, so I'll turn it to you first.
Thank you. I move that the Board of Supervisors seek legislation that would amend Section 33.2-1904 to expand the representation for Loudoun County on the Northern Virginia Transportation Commission, either through weighted voting or by adding a non-legislative voting member. And I further move that any legislation that broadens NVTC oversight of WMATA issues be supported.
Second.
Thank you.
Motion has been made and seconded by Supervisor Volpe. Opening, Mr. Reed.
Yes, we've already supported the fact that we have only one vote on NVTC, me, and that happened when we opted into Metro. But so does Falls Church and the city of Fairfax. They have one each, and there's a real imbalance there, especially when we're about to have three Metro stations built in our boundaries. There's also an issue with the fact that there are just a lot of decision makers at the table. I think there's something like 20 elected representatives in NVTC, and what this would do is this would essentially, seek legislation to either have like a weighted system or to, so Fairfax gets, a couple of votes per person, we get a couple of votes per person. And also the WMATA budget. Last year, NVTC reviewed Metro's budget for the first time. And again, I have to remind my colleagues that since we're going to have Metro in our borders, the best way of influencing WMATA and Metro is through NVTC. We have no guarantee there will ever be a Loudoun County person who will be appointed to the WMATA board itself. So what this does is it essentially asks our delegation to support legislation dealing with voting representation and also to deal with the NVTC statute, which has not been revised in many, many years. Thank you.
Further discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Board members, next item is revisions to plat requirements for boundary line adjustments between localities. And I'm just going to go ahead and this is coming from mapping in a county attorney's office. I'll move that the Board of Supervisors seek legislation that would amend the Code of Virginia to allow for Loudoun County to utilize geographic information system maps established by the Virginia State Plan Coordinate System Zone for purposes of boundary line adjustments.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded by Ms. Clark. Discussion on that. Ms. Clark?
Yes, just briefly, Mr. Chairman. I think the board probably recalls the prior information that came forward that this is the result of the need for, and that was discussions with the town of Hillsboro and the need for boundary line adjustments in that arena. So I appreciate the motion being refined to be more encompassing. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? That motion will also be unanimous. Item number five is from Mr. Reed, Virtual Way Stations Study. Mr. Reed?
If you don't mind, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to table this to the next meeting.
You want to table this one for now? Okay. You want to table permanently or
no, just postpone to the next
another
meeting.
Time? Okay, thank very good. So we'll go to item number six, which is Dulles Greenway. And board members, this is one that we have done before, but I'm going to do this just for a reconfirmation of our earlier policy statement with this. And I move that the Board of Supervisors continue to support measures and legislation that address toll rate concerns, including but not limited to a potential state acquisition of Dulles Greenway and distance-based and time-based tolling structures to reduce the cost for Greenway users and to reduce toll-induced traffic congestion on alternative routes.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded by Supervisor Bona. We know our frustration with the toll road. They continue to be highway robbers, and the state needs to take this facility over. And it's one thing if people are paying a toll to ride the road, and the tolls were actually going to improve something in the system, but they're headed off to some corporation in Australia to keep investors totally happy at the pounding of our commuters' wallets. and or people being just simply stuck in traffic on Route 7 and Route 50 because they're avoiding the Greenway. And it's unfortunate with this, too, as well, is that the FCC is doing very little to represent the citizens of the Commonwealth of Virginia, and particularly Loudoun County, when they take up the matter and say there's simply no evidence that the tolls are causing bleeding from the Greenway onto Route 7. Perhaps they ought to spend a week up here. Mr. Higgins, your light is on. Did you want to comment?
I'd just like to comment that I support this absolutely. For those that live in Western Loudoun, the only way out is the toll road, and they're paying these tolls that are soon going to be $25 a day. You start doing the math on that. And so hopefully we can get some movement in the right direction on this legislation and bring some relief, because otherwise they're pushed off onto the side roads. I go Route 7 in the morning because of the toll road.
Thank you. Ms. Clark.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree wholeheartedly that something needs to be done with respect to the toll road rates. My concern, however, is that with the distance tolling, that it is possible if they implement that, that they would increase the rates on the western end more so than they are now to compensate for what they would lower on the other exits. And then what that could result in is people further bypassing the exits that would be of higher cost and loading up congested roads even more in order to get to the lesser expensive exits. So that's for future discussion, but I think it's a real concern.
Further discussion on the motion, I would concur with that. Sometimes you got to be careful what you're wishing for, because that could happen. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion, I'm sorry, you're the no? Okay. That motion will carry 8-1 with Mr. Reed opposed. Our next item is item number 7, sunset of data center sales tax. And Mr. Letourneau, did you want to do anything with this evening?
I have an item. I just don't have the motion page up. There we go. I move the Board of Supervisors support legislation that extends or eliminates the sunset date for the data center sales tax exemption currently scheduled to sunset in 2020.
Second. Motion has been made, seconded by Supervisor Volpe. Discussion, Ms. Letourneau?
No, I think it's pretty self-explanatory. One of the great things about data centers is that they're the gift that keeps on giving in terms of revenue, because the equipment in them has to be refreshed every couple of years. So we obtain not only just property taxes, but also tax revenue that's coming from the equipment inside. And that equipment becomes new every few years, and therefore it becomes a sustained source of revenue. It goes without saying that all of us support data centers in the right place, and sometimes things happen and they slip in where we wish they weren't, but that should not impact our overall support for the industry in many parts of Loudoun County.
All right. Further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The motion is unanimous. Our next item is item number 8, revenue sharing program. This is coming from our Department of Transportation Capital Infrastructure, and I'll just make the motion. I move that the Board of Supervisors support continued use of this program as an effective way to leverage local state funds and oppose decreasing the recent funding allocations for this program.
Second.
Motion has been made, seconded by Supervisor Reed. Discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion will carry unanimous. Item number 9, Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority. Supervisor Reed, this is coming from you.
Thank you very much, sir. I move the Board of Supervisors support legislation, it should say support, not supports, that initiates review and update of the WMATA compact, including but not limited to subjecting WMATA's financial records to audit by the signatories.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded by Supervisor Volpe. Do you have an opening, Mr. Reed?
Yes. WMATA is now under federal safety oversight, but not financial oversight. And Metro has chronic financial and management problems, and we know Metro is coming to Loudoun. We want to make sure that Metro is run better. I notice a lot of people are least in some of these candidate debates, are now second-guessing our decision to opt in. And but the fact of the matter is that we can make Metro better, and one of the things that we can do is to ensure more accountability. The board of Metro is made up of unpaid people, many of whom are elected or former elected officials. They don't have a lot of time to really look at the details. And NVTC exists, but again, it doesn't really do a lot of oversight, even though it's got 11 staff members. But they just help the Virginia representatives if they ever do. But the thing is, though, that would be really be great is if WMATA's records could be looked at by the three jurisdictions, and all three actually have some very good auditing agencies. We have one in Richmond, which is very good. It looked at VDOT several years ago and came up with some significant changes. I understand this will have to go to Congress for a vote, but it starts with the three compact jurisdictions, D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. And again, this is just gets the ball rolling and just lets our legislative representatives know that we would like to at least see a conversation about the Metro Compact to bring it up to date and to ensure a better-run Metro system. Thank you.
Very good. Any other comment at this time? Ms. Clark?
No.
Okay. Others? All right. Seeing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion will be unanimous, and that's it for those nine.
Mr. Chairman, there's the broadband item.
Hold on. I'm getting there. I can follow my agenda. Did you have any thing that you wanted to bring up before I go into the other sections that you need to bring up?
No.
Okay, so we're covered. So let's go into the follow-up on a broadband coverage by census tract and farm brewery road impacts. Ms. Clark?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to ask Mr. Yud to just explain his discussion he had at the state level, because I had suggested that he contact our representative on the VACO, Economic Development and Planning Committee, because we have been working on broadband language there. And so, Mr. Yud, if you could explain why it seems sensible for us to be making this motion, passing this motion today.
Thank you, Mrs. Clark. I'll move as quickly as I can. When the issue was identified, we focused on the federal side as an FCC requirement, reporting requirement. And in subsequent discussions, we realized that VACO may be coming up with a position for jurisdictions here in the Commonwealth. So what you see on the blue paper is from VACO just, I believe, on Monday that they dispatched to members. And overall, it addresses the issue of expanding broadband accessibility throughout the Commonwealth. But specifically, there is an item in there about the very issue that Mrs. Clark brought up on the September 16th meeting, and that is the reporting requirement. So we have a dual purpose motion. One is for the board to support VACO's position overall on broadband accessibility, and then number two, to seek action in the future on that specific FCC requirement.
And thank you for that, Mr. Yud, and all your work on this. With that, I move that the Board of Supervisors support the VACO broadband position, expanding broadband accessibility throughout the Commonwealth. And I further move that the Board of Supervisors support changes to the FCC 477 reporting requirements for broadband providers in order to allow for more accurate mapping of existing broadband coverage and availability.
Second.
Motion has been made, I think, seconded by Supervisor Higgins. And I'm sorry, you were reading off of paper. Is there a motion?
It's the lighter colored blue.
Yeah, this one.
I got it. Thank you. All right. Further discussion on Mr. Higgins, your light is on. Okay. All right. Ms. Clark, anything?
No, sir. I think we all are aware of how much needs to be done.
All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion will be unanimous. And in the farm brewery road impacts, do you have anything you wish to add?
We have nothing to add from the staff report, but we're glad to take your questions.
All right. Very good. Any questions, Ms. Clark?
Not at this time.
Okay. Any others? All right. Seeing none. let's see. And section C was basically just existing positions, and just note on there, you may have seen some things, board members, that have been lopped off due to success in the past, so which we've had quite a bit in the last few years, amazingly. When you hire the right people, it gets done. So anyway, is there anything else you guys need to bring to our attention?
No, sir.
All right, very good. And we will come back first meeting in November. I don't know if board members will have anything else to come forward, but our intent is to go to public hearing at the November public hearing with Mr. adoption Chairman. That evening, correct?
Correct.
And turn your mic on, please, sir.
Correct. We, at this moment, because of your direction at the prior meeting to come have board members bring their motions forward, we don't really have anything else to add to the package to take to public hearing.
No, I understand, but there may be something on November 4th.
Mr. Chairman, I actually have a couple things right here.
Oh, I apologize, sorry. Mr. Higgins. And before I go to Mr. Higgins, we have scheduled a luncheon with the delegation for November
19th.
19th, okay, and we will be in the new Dulles conference room.
Correct. Okay.
All right, very good. Mr. Higgins, I apologize for ignoring you. I'll turn the time over to you for your motions.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to make a motion, and I move that the Board of Supervisors request legislation to amend Section 32.2-332 to increase the average daily traffic threshold for rural rustic road designation from 1,500 cars per day to 2,500 cars per day.
Second.
All right, motion has been made and seconded, and Mr. Higgins, you want to give some background to this?
I don't want to belabor the point too much right now because we're going to get into this item in a minute, but this basically has to do with item 4, where we have a piece of Shreve Mill Road that is a main feeder road to the toll road, the Greenway toll road, and we have been trying to get it paved since 2014. We had it on the schedule to be paved in 2014. Then the money that we had received from the state in 2013 disappeared. As a function of that disappearing act, then we used rural rustic road program money to get it paved and moved it out into 16. And now we found that the rural rustic road program money won't qualify for this piece of real estate that needs to be paved because it's gone over 1,500 cars per day. Now, had we paved this a year or two ago like we had intended to, we wouldn't be in this situation, and we basically have a piece of road that has got to be paved some way. So this is going to be related to conversation we'll have later, but I'm hoping that we'll get broad support for this, and this will be an option that we may have to use down the road to get paving money for that road.
Okay, so I do have a question with respect to intent. I know the Shreveport issue and understand. Is your intent to have this affect every road in Loudoun County as well?
I think it would, but I don't see that this is a bad thing. It would give us more options with that funding because we've got a lot of rural roads that have a lot of traffic that we may need to do something with. And so by having this threshold, we just rule them out.
I'm going to be with you now, but I got to check in. My only concern is we are now piling up an awful lot of trips on roads that should not have an awful lot of trips beyond the 1,500. And I understand where we are right now, but the concern is safety. And just because we increase it to 2,500 isn't going to increase the pot of money to get anything done. So you got your light on, Roger. Do you have any thoughts on this?
My thoughts are much like yours, Mr. Chairman. I can imagine that VDOT's response to this is going to be, well, there is a safety issue. The reason these are called rural rustic roads is that they're low volume roads and they're not designed or built to handle the higher traffic volumes, and they would want, when you get to that higher traffic volume, to do a more extensive road improvement.
Okay. All right. Mr. Bona?
Yes, thank you. I understand what Supervisor Higgins is trying to do here, but I am worried about the unintended consequences as well. And I frankly don't know if we really have much of a shot of getting this legislation through. Mr. Wiley, what's your thoughts?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Bono, I would not be real optimistic about getting, certainly not an increase of that magnitude. Right.
And there's a tremendous amount of irony here. They gave us the state gave us the funds to pave this road. Then they took the funds away. So then we're forced to go to real rustic standard. And in the time it took to get that declared and to get the money, then the road went over 1,500 trips a day. And now we can't pave it because the trips went up.
It's sort of too much traffic to pave it now.
And we all know what a mess this is and the potholes. I mean, the irony is just incredible here. I would rather support us getting this segment. It's about $6, $7 million into the CIP and trying to handle it that way. It probably would be much more effective than chasing legislation that could have other consequences to other roads and has probably very little chance of getting through the General Assembly.
I just want to ask one logistic question. Would it be better for us to simply add the word for the Forest Report and just ask that request limited to the one road?
I think if you're going to have any shot at making this happen at all, it would be much more likely be for one road than for the broader change.
Would you accept that as a friendly amendment?
Mr. Chairman.
Okay, so report to it.
I'm going to make a motion later to appeal the decision that they made anyway, so we may get there that way, but that's coming in the next.
Yeah. All right. Mr. Reed.
Thank you very much. What I was going to suggest, since we're going to be, I want to remind my colleagues that we have a multi-million dollar fire and rescue facility and fire and public safety firing range that's supposed to be built on Shreve Mill, and that was the main impetus originally to get this road paved. And to take money out of our CIP for it is really, I think, would be really terrible. This would be taken away from other road projects. I support the motion, but I'm wondering, Roger, if it's possible that they would look at the rural rustic road standard if it's facility, you know, to change it if it has to support a public facility.
I don't know the answer to that specific question. I know Loudoun obviously has a long history with these rural rustic roads, and I think the concept may even have originated here with some work that Ms. Porter did before we were working for you years ago to try to get more flexibility on the improvement of these roads so that you didn't have to, every time you wanted to improve one, you didn't have to get additional right-of-way and do all those sorts of things that complicate it. But I do know that it's something that the engineers at VDOT are not thrilled to do ever. They always think you need to build the roads to the safety standard that's required by the volume of traffic on the road. And so,
well, they didn't do that in 2007.
I understand they're not always consistent in their position, but I think that I just learned about this particular issue this afternoon, and I don't know the details or the exact history of the funding of this particular project. We can certainly explore that with VDOT and see if there's some way to get some flexibility, but I think
Mr. Reed's point is a good one, and in your discussion with the legislative body on this, get the history, but more so to the fact that we have a public use facility on this road. It's not just like we're doing it for the sake of doing it.
And if I can reclaim my time just a few seconds, it's yes. $400,000 versus $5.5 million. So.
Ms. Letourneau?
Yeah, I think the problem is, though, the public use facility is not going to help the argument on the rural rustic road because it takes it even further away from the character of a rural rustic road. I think the problem here is that we're trying to fit a square peg in a round hole, and what we really need is a pot of money for unpaved roads that go beyond the rural rustic road designation. So instead of trying to twist and change rural rustic roads, maybe what we ought to be doing is requesting that VDOT fund a program specifically for roads in this category, because, as Ralph said, it is counterintuitive. You have a situation where you have roads that have higher volume, and we can't get them paved because the volume's too high. So I don't know if that's something to try to do legislatively or administratively, but what we really need is a separate pot of funding, whether or not there's any funds allocated in it, but at least a start in terms of the way these are administered for unpaved roads, period, that that are above the volume of a rural rustic road.
They did that. It's called NVTA.
We did have that, but it disappeared in a year.
Are there any?
Yeah, there was at one time a separate allocation.
Well, why not ask for it again?
So,
I mean, it's got a better shot than this does. They're not going to change the rural rustic road standard.
Other comments? Closing, Mr. Higgins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the issues that Mr. Boner raised, I mean, it is ironic. So the worse the road gets, the less chance we get of paving it. I mean, the bottom line is we have got to pave this road. I don't know if you all had a chance to look at those pictures, but you could drive around in those potholes on that road. And so we're going to do nothing, and we're going to raise the standards so we can do nothing longer because there's less money out there for that. I mean, it's kind of insanity. So I would hope that maybe if nothing else happens from this legislation that someone will wake up and smell the coffee. Thank you.
All right. All in favor of the motion as amended, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed. That motion will carry unanimously. And next
one?
Well. Your green one?
Yes, the green one.
Okay, Mr. Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Let me make a motion. I move the Board of Supervisors support or request legislation that allows a licensed physician to prescribe, administer, or dispense long-term antibiotic therapy to a patient diagnosed with Lyme disease, and also specifies that the Board of Medicine shall not initiate a disciplinary action against a licensed physician solely for prescribing, administering, or dispensing long-term antibiotic therapy to a patient clinically diagnosed with Lyme disease, provided such clinical diagnosis and treatment has been documented in the patient's medical record by such licensed physician.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded. Mr. Higgins, you have an opening to this?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have been approached by some physicians that are, in fact, treating patients for Lyme disease and are concerned about some of the conversation that is going on in other circles within the medical community that would restrict their ability and right to prescribe long-term antibiotics to their patients. The problem comes from some of the discussion in the medical community with regards to the abuse of antibiotics, where they're being prescribed for every little thing, their effectiveness is being destroyed, and people are basically becoming people are not, but strains of diseases are becoming immune to the antibiotics. That is not the point here. These are long-term therapies that a doctor who knows what he's doing with Lyme disease has prescribed, and that this would not be interfered with. There is similar legislation to this in the state of Vermont, New Hampshire, and I believe New York. Delegate Rust was working on a bill to this extent when he was in office, I think, last year. I would hope that we can get support for this. It basically leaves this determination up to the doctor and his diagnosis for Lyme disease.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Higgins. I'm having a challenge with this because I'm not in the medical profession, and I don't know exactly what I'm asking for. So I'm gonna make a motion to table this until November 4th. Invite Dr. Goodfriend here and invite you to provide us with any information you can get for us to read. I'm just not ready to do this tonight. So the motion has been seconded by Mr. Bona. All in favor of the motion to table signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed?
No.
Okay, that motion will carry 8-1 with Mr. Reed opposed. And so anything you can do to provide information?
We will get the information for the board. Thank you.
All right. Very good. Are there any other items from board members at this time? All right. Seeing none, board members, I want to get into our executive session since it is 5 o'clock, and so I'm going to ask Mr. Bona if he will please read the motion.
Yes, I move that the Loudoun County Board of Supervisors recess this public meeting and enter into closed session pursuant to Virginia Code Section 2.2-3711A3 to consider the acquisition of real property for the Luckett's Fire and Rescue Station and the disposition of county-owned property in Ashburn. A discussion in an open meeting would adversely affect the bargaining position or negotiating strategy of the board. I further move that the Loudoun County Board of Supervisors recess this public meeting, enter into closed session pursuant to Virginia Code Section 2.2-3711A7 for consultation with legal counsel pertaining to actual or probable litigation and on a specific legal matter regarding the settlement of a claim for a construction contract and regarding a declaratory judgment action by a homeowners association seeking judicial guidance.
Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Letourneau. Discussion, seeing none. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion carries 8-0-1 with Ms. Volpe absent for the vote. All right.
I move that the closed session be adjourned, that the Board of Supervisors reconvene its public meeting, and that the minutes of the public meeting should reflect that no formal action was taken in the closed session.
Motion has been made, seconded by Ms. Volpe. Discussion? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion will carry 8-0-1. You are an aye. All right, we're unanimous then. Mr. Bono.
I move that the resolution certifying the closed session be adopted and reflected in the minutes of this public meeting.
Motion has been made, seconded by Supervisor Volpe. Discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries unanimously. And Mr. Higgins, there is a motion at the table for you, I believe. Oh, actually, I'm sorry. We'll go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I move the Board of Supervisors direct staff to close the contract with Dustin Construction, Inc. for the construction of the transit maintenance and operations facility and release the remaining retainage in the amount of $104,093.25.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded by Mr. Reed. Discussion? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion will carry unanimous. Board members, I'm going to see if we can at least accomplish item number 4 and then try to take a 10-minute recess before we get to the 6 o'clock hour. So item number 4, rescinding Rural Rustic Road, designation for a segment of Shreve Mill Road. Mr. Higgins, I believe you wanted this off.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. As you all saw in my emails yesterday, I'm very disturbed about what's happened with this and the evaporation of the money. We talked about it a lot a few minutes ago. You know, this is a road that needs to be paved. I don't know where the money's going to come from, but it's got to come from someplace. And I've been telling people for 3 years that it's going to be paved, and as recently as, like, yesterday, until we found out that it's not going to be paved. And, you know, Mr. Bona mentioned the irony of all this. We're digging a hole that I don't know where we're ever going to get out of, and literally the potholes on that road are big enough to drive around and take a tour of. And so I would hope that I'm going to make a motion here. I would hope that we can find a way to reverse this decision by VDOT, or and I have another motion as well, hopefully to find some funding to take care of this problem, because you got a road that feeds the Greenway and commuters are on it every day, and by our own numbers it's more than 2,000 cars, and we're going to do nothing about it. So, Mr. Chairman, I would move that the Board of Supervisors request an appeal of VDOT's determination that Shreve Mill no longer meets the criteria for the Rural Rustic Road designation as outlined on page 3 of the VDOT Rural Rustic Road manual, and that says planning and approval process of the road, quote, if the road is not eligible, the Board of Supervisors may appeal the decision through the residency administrator to the district administrator and ultimately to the chief engineer for the consideration by the Commissioner of Highways.
Second.
Motion has been made and seconded by Supervisor Reed. Further discussion, Mr. Higgins. All right, Mr. Reed.
This is a real kick in the stomach, and it would have been nice if Mr. Higgins had gotten a heads up on this, because we actually had this funded at one time, because there was, for a hot minute after the transportation funding proposal, there was a pot of money for rural rustic roads, and we were actually going to pave, if you believe it or not, Cochran Mill Road, which parallels Cross Trail Boulevard. We actually had the money, and then it was taken away, I believe, Ms. Laycock, because the state had no money, right? They had to cut back something, and they got rid of that pot of money from the 2013 transportation funding bill.
There were two issues. First, the revenues did decline, so there was less money to go around statewide. And secondly, they changed the legislation for how they were going to use the unpaved road money. They had prioritized initially that they were going to put the money on roads with 250 vehicle trips or greater so that they could do more high-volume roads. And when that information got around statewide, and Loudoun was the total beneficiary because we have so many high-volume unpaved roads, there was legislation that was put in to reduce that 250 back to 50, which then reduced our significantly the amount of money from about $48 million over 6 years to currently just under $5
million. Yeah, and that's the thing. It might be an opportunity for legislation. I forgot that VDOT had actually got legislation through to change that. So that might be an opportunity for our delegates. Maybe it'd be good for you to discuss that with our legislative folks, Mr. Yud and so forth. But this is an important project, not just for his constituents and mine who are stuck on Battlefield Parkway and that bottleneck at Evergreen Mill Road, but it's important for the fire and rescue facility that we're building there. Chief Brower told me earlier, we don't have a single fire and rescue facility in this county that's located on a dirt road. And at one time, there was supposed to be a school built there at that site. That was actually originally a school site. So I support the motion. I urge my colleagues to do so, and I urge the board to do whatever they can to legislatively and administratively to ensure that this road and other roads deserving of this volume get paved. Thank you. At a lower cost, and it's $420,000 versus $5.5 million.
Time is up. Let me just quickly ask, Terry, if I may. So because the road now handles more traffic than is allowed under the Rural Rustic Road Standard, they're refusing to spend the money on essentially doing pave in place?
They will not be able to pave it to a Rural Rustic Road Standard. The next standard for that type of road, for that type of traffic, is something called a GS3, which actually reconstructs the road, fixes the drainage.
Okay. I appreciate that. But since they're not doing that, and they have no money to do the next standard, doesn't it make some logical sense to go ahead and do something of a pave in place until such time that VDOT has money to do the standard that they wish, or do they feel higher volume is safer on a gravel road that needs continued maintenance?
I think it certainly is logical as to how you described it. I think the problem is the state legislation, you know, codified legislation says 1,500 vehicle trips today to do it to that standard.
I want to see if Mr. Freed goes like this or like this. What if we were to put the money for the pave in place? Could we move forward with it, since nobody has money to do this project?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, paving place limit is less than rural rustic. It's actually 750 vehicles per day, unfortunately. So since it is within the legislation that's the upper limit, we can think about some other ways perhaps. I don't know what that is, outside our traditional construction process, which Ms. Laycock mentioned.
Well, let me ask the question again. Are we saying if we go with rural rustic standard, $421,000 would do the project? Is that what I'm reading here?
That's correct.
Okay. So what if we were to provide that funding so that we could at least get the road in some safe order, and until either the state or other revenue sources comes available to do the project to the standard VDOT is saying now that this road has jumped into because of the trip volume?
Yes, that legislation, again, is for use of unpaved funds. If the county comes up with the money, if I'm understanding you correctly, to do some improvements, whether it's paved or whatever, that is not to our construction standards and is not a VDA, is not a state funding, we can consider that, obviously, yes. But from safety perspective, when you have a road paved, you're going to have increased traffic, increased speed. And generally speaking, for that level of traffic, you want to engineer it, and you don't want to just go ahead and put asphalt on it.
I understand that. Mr. Letourneau?
So to carry that on for a minute then, would VDOT still have to approve it even if VDOT wasn't funding it?
Yes.
Okay. So what you're basically telling us is VDOT, we could fund it. We could put the money in, take it out of Rural Western Road, but VDOT probably wouldn't approve it. You don't know that, but that's...
You don't know that.
But that's what you're sort of telling us. Okay.
Because it hasn't been engineered. And one of the things with Rural Rustic Program is that it doesn't necessarily have to be full plans of engineering.
Well,
and that's right. What makes it less expensive.
I'm wondering if, because we got an immediate issue, which is the fire facility, right. And then you have some residents in this area. I wonder if there's a way to try to restrict traffic to only fire personnel and or local residents as opposed to cut-through traffic, if that's some way to handle this. Question I have, I guess, for Mr. Higgins is, what is it that we're appealing exactly? I mean, there's an appeal. We're asking for an appeal. So on what basis are we appealing? Because it either is or it isn't over 1,500. Are we saying it's not? Do we have a different traffic count?
There's an appeal process in their manual that's cited on the paper there.
Yeah, but what are we saying is wrong about their decision?
Well, when I get my closing comments...
Mr. Higgins, you can answer his question.
Well, I'll tell you what my question about this whole thing is.
Mr. Higgins, he's simply asking, what is it that you think we're trying to appeal?
We are appealing their decision that this money will not be used on this road because it has passed a 1,500 vehicle threshold, that it was approved and put on to be paved, and we've been talking about it for 2 or 3 years.
Okay.
And
right.
Do we got
the answer. He wants his time.
Well, all right. I have no problem supporting it, but is there a way for us to present some evidence or some alternative theory? Because this seems pretty black and white to me. It's either 1,500 or it's not. And if it's over 1,500, I can't imagine we're going to win an appeal unless we're arguing that it's not. So I don't know, Tara, if you have any.
I would suggest that if the board were of the mind to want to file an appeal, that we do it and ask that it be grandfathered. There's never been an appeal filed under this program statewide.
Oh.
So, no.
Okay.
So.
All right. I'm happy to support it. It's not that. I'm just trying to figure out if there's a way for us to do it that would enhance our chance of success.
It's just one option. We can.
Okay. Mr. Bonner.
Yes, thank you. As I mentioned earlier in the meeting, the irony of this is just incredible. But that said, if we don't rescind, does the money just sit there?
The money will sit there on that project until the board amends or changes the funding in your secondary road 6-year plan. We do that on an annual basis, so that decision would be discussed next summer when you take up the FY17.
So that could be an option. At the same time, if we do rescind, the money could be allocated to a different project under Rural Rustic in Loudoun.
VDOT will not do that. It's only when the board says we want to take this money that was allocated to Shreve Mill for this purpose and put it over to another project. So the money could sit there. We could say go ahead and start design for the larger, project. But then the problem is you may have designed for something that you have no construction money or no idea of where you're going to get it, but
agreed.
It's an option.
And this problem is only going to get worse because let's not forget, this is a major cut through. People take it from Sicklin over to Evergreen Mills, and you get the Greenway in between. At the same time, let's not forget the Academy. The Academy's a Loudoun are coming in here, and it's going to be a cut through to get to the Academy. Everybody's going to be coming from that direction is going to use this to get over there. They're not going to come down Belmont Ridge because it comes out right by the school property. Charles?
If I could just suggest maybe the combo platter approach would be the best, which is the appeal, the legislative issue from earlier, and then if we maybe had a strategy to not take an action to relocate the funds, then they're there. While the appeal is pending, we also work with Fareed at the same time and say, to what extent would you allow us to approval based on some whatever VDOT design standard if we funded? So a whole combination of possibilities to look
right,
at
okay,
trying to
well,
get
thank
there.
You. And that's why I asked the question, what happens if we don't rescind? Because I think, in my mind, we should just let this money sit here until we work our way through it. It doesn't need to go out to some other project right now, because we know this is an urgent thing to happen. If the county did do something with this road, like the chairman suggested, would we be responsible for O&M of that road, too? Or would VDOT? Use your microphone, please.
VDOT would.
Okay, thank you. That's all I had. Thank you.
All right. Any others? Closing, Mr. Higgins.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is the email I received from a representative of VDOT in, I actually opened it on April Fool's Day. Maybe that's why it doesn't hold much water. As previously reported, Shreve Mill Road is next on the list of paving under Rural Rustic Program and a proposed advertisement date of September 2016 with the allocation of $340K over 2016 and 17. We are expecting an update to the cost estimates within 3 to 6 months, if not sooner, to confirm that we do not need additional funds. We will certainly look at all possibilities to advance the schedule as much as possible. Well, we're not advancing it very much, I don't think. And my biggest heartburn with this is, why did we choose to do a study a month ago? Not even a month ago, 3 weeks ago, out of the clear blue sky on a road that had already been approved and was in the queue. Now, do we retest? We take the temperature of all these roads every month, every 6 months, every year, every 3 months? I mean, why this one?
I can answer that question, because there's a special exception that's being processed right now for a firing range on this road. And as the county staff was going through the referral process, as the county staff was going through the referral process, there was a question, because this road was so close to the 1,500 vehicle trip a day limit, as to whether or not that firing range would take it over the limit. So VDOT, before they answered that question, wanted to do updated counts and find out where we were in the process. That application for the special exception is going to the Planning Commission in November. So you all will be discussing this road very specifically very soon.
Thank you, Ms. Laycock. I think, do you want more of your time? Go ahead.
I am glad to hear that it was not nefarious. Rather, it's a unintended consequences and friendly fire that caught us in this. But for crying out loud, we've got to find a way to get some money to fund this. I mean, this is nuts. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And just remember, nobody has approved the special exception yet, so. All in favor of the motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right.
Mr. Chairman, I have another motion related to this, if you don't mind.
Where is it?
It'll be quick.
Quickly.
Very quick. Mr. Chairman, I move the Board of Supervisors, the green one there, I'm sorry, pass that out. I move the Board of Supervisors include paving of Shreve Mill Road in the FY 2017 Capital Improvement Program CIP discussion.
Motion has been made and seconded. Mr. Higgins, I'm going to ask you a minute that we just send it forward to the upcoming budget discussions, because I can't tell you right now if it fits or not. And
well, that's what my intention is.
Okay. All right. Just then the motion will be, I move that the Board of Supervisors include paving a Shreve Mill Road the discussion of paving a Shreve Mill Road to the upcoming fiscal 17 budget discussions.
Mr. Chairman.
Which has been seconded by Mr. Bona. Motion made by Mr. Higgins, please.
I was going to say, do you just want to direct me to try to fit it into the budget?
That will work. Thank you. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion will carry unanimous. Board members, let's come back 5 after the hour to pick up with public comment. Board members, if I could get you back at the dais, please. Board members, we have a presentation that we're going to make, but we have a few folks that we're waiting for, so let's go ahead and take up our public comment for this evening. And for those members of the public that have signed up to speak, they would be given 2 minutes to do so. We'd ask when your name is called, please come forward to one of the podiums in front of us, state your name for the public record. And our first public speaker is Anthony Norpell, to be followed by Gary Nicely.
Yes, good evening. So a dialogue on climate change and global income inequality, I gave a handout. On October 23rd, Friday, which is this Friday, 6 p.m. at George Washington University in Ashburn, we are hosting Klaus Hubacek to speak and lead a discussion on Pope Francis's two moral issues, world poverty and global warming. So we will have food there, we will have wine, vendors of sustainable products and nonprofits. The public is invited. In fact, everybody in this room is invited, and the attendance is free, and you could check my Blue Ridge Leader articles for details. Now, in 2014, I described positive natural feedbacks in the Earth's climate system amplifying the warming caused by our carbon emissions. I posited another amplifying feedback, namely human behavior. Alaska's Governor Bill Walker told BBC's News on October 12th that the state needs to urgently drill in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge to help finance its adaptation to climate change. Quote, we are in a significant fiscal challenge. We have villages that are washing away because of climate change, changes in the climate. His request to increase drilling to address global warming is surreal, but it's a predictable dysfunctional behavior. And I see my time is running out. So in conclusion, I hope to see some of your faces on Friday. And if you can't make it, I know it's a busy season for you all to be reelected and so forth. You, invite your staff to attend and get some education. It's going to be a very good lecture. Thank you very much. And the audience, you're all invited too.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Norpell. Gary Nicely, to be followed by Donna Fortier.
Good evening, everyone. My name's Gary Nicely. I got a few comments here about our infrastructure. First, I suggest we use satellite computer input to design our transportation infrastructure because what we have is not working. It's generally overpriced. And when we do have public input sessions, the public isn't listened to. I went to a session where we had 13 people, and five of them talked about an addition to this intersection. Mr. Delgadio, Mrs. Volpe, did they stand up and speak up and say, yes, we will take a look at this? I felt like I'd been invited to a dance, and you didn't want to dance. I mean, you laugh, you think it's funny, but we're spending time in traffic because of your foolishness. You know, for $50,000, we could have put in another northbound lane. No, instead, you know, we wasted, what, $3.5 million on a traffic improvement that hasn't improved anything. So I'd like to thank Mrs. Volpe for standing up for the five people who spoke on the same subject at that meeting, public input session, PIS, PIS. That's what it amounted to, wasting my time. Oh, another thing about this Kim Davis woman. Has she gotten to the part in the Bible where it says, render unto Caesar what is Caesar's? I wonder about that.
Thank you, Mr. Nicely. Donna Fortier will be followed by Angela Rands.
Thank you, Chairman York and members of the Board of Supervisors. My name is Donna Fortier, and I am the CEO and founder of Mobile Hope. Mobile Hope, if you don't know, is a nonprofit organization here in Loudoun County that helps our young and struggling and precariously housed individuals, 24 years of age and younger. We help them with all of their essential needs, emotional support, and finding medical homes and that type of thing. I am here before you this evening to ask for your support and consideration in helping Mobile Hope become a tax-exempt organization. As most of you know, most of the nonprofits in Loudoun County struggle every day for every penny that they get, and we are all such great stewards of our finances, so every little bit would help. So again, I'm asking for your support and consideration in allowing us to be a nonprofit tax-exempt organization. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Foyer. Angela Rands to be followed by Gerard Gurgit.
My name's Angela Rands, and my husband and I moved to Red Cedar Subdivision 8 years ago. We purchased a home there. Very excited to live there and love the access to really all parts of Loudoun County there. I was very appreciative of Supervisor Higgins, who I contacted in regards to a kind of a sticky situation I had on Shreve Mill Road last February. Since moving there 8 years ago, the traffic on Shreve Mill Road has increased. Tenfold. I mean, I'm not a digital counter, but every time I traverse that road, I pass vehicles that aren't supposed to be accessing that road. Semi-trailers, truck trailers, garbage trucks accessing the dump down the road. There's school buses use that road to access Sicklin Road, and when you make those turns, I'm surprised that I haven't been hit or other cars haven't been hit or I haven't hit other cars. When I contacted Supervisor Higgins, it happened to be on a day where a school bus was stuck on that road and traffic back up to Sicklin Creek Road. So my concern to the board is just the safety of that road is being used by more vehicles than it should be used, by types of vehicles that it shouldn't be used by school buses, by 18-wheel semi trucks that go down that road, by moving my moving truck, my semi 18-wheeler, use that road to get to my house. And I don't know if VDOT is aware of the type of vehicles that are traversing that very small and usually washed away pothole ridden road. And my concern is the safety of my family when I travel down it, the safety of the vehicles that I use when I travel down it, and what kind of damages that VDOT might ensue when vehicles hit each other because the road has become completely unsafe. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Ms. Rands. Gerard Gurgic is our concluding speaker for this evening. Gerard.
Thank you. Again, Jerry Gurgic, live in Ashburn. And I've been up here a lot promoting PACE. I did hear some remarks attributed to one of the board members recently that were pretty discouraging. There were comments related to not being able to reduce carbon footprints further in our communities. And I did want to share that, you know, I've done enough calculations of energy and carbon footprints to know that I can achieve on a typical house, if it happens to have a good solar exposure, of 90%. And I can make that carbon footprint reduction cash flow positive to that owner in a PACE program. We have a problem with the structure of the financing for energy improvements. It's not a need for further technologies or better technologies. It's simply a matter of structuring energy conservation improvements to attach to the property and not causing people to be the ones at risk for how buildings perform. So I hope you'll consider that. I'd like to issue a challenge. I'll donate $1,000. To any charity, for any board member that contacts me, lets me explain their own carbon footprint and how they can reduce it by at least 60 to 70% and have it be cash flow positive. Don't know if that'll help, but thank you.
Thank you. And we do have a later arrival here, Asad Sagafi.
Good evening. I'd like to discuss the Shreve Mill Road issue at hand. I live on Evergreen Mills Road directly across the street from Shreve Mill Road. I've lived there for over 10 years. And as the lady who spoke previously said, traffic on that road has increased exponentially over the past 10 years that I've seen. It's a major artery to the Dulles Greenway now. Personally, I've encountered 3 or 4 flat tires on that road. When it rains, it has to be regraded every single time. Sometimes it takes days. I've seen it go weeks before it gets regraded. Potholes becoming a foot, sometimes a foot and a half deep. Stops traffic. Cars have to maneuver around one another. Even right now, parts of it that are paved need work done. There's potholes in the paved portions of it. To my knowledge, there's over 2,000 cars per day on that road. I came across a study by the Kentucky Department of Transportation. Their recommendation to counties in Kentucky is that any rural road with 400 to 500 cars per day should be paved. So that's just a recommendation from Kentucky. I know it's out of state, but I thought it could relate to the matter. In addition to that, there have been multiple accidents directly in front of my house because of that road. It's such a heavily trafficked road, and so many people are in such a rush to make that turn from that 25-mile-per-hour zone to the 55-mile-per-hour zone on Evergreen Mills Road. We've had our fence driven over 3-4 times. We've had car accidents there numerous times, police reports. There was one accident where someone had to be taken in an ambulance. So in addition to that, the dust that comes up from that road when people drive it is horrendous. Just today on my way here, I was driving that road. I drive that road a minimum of 2 times every day to get to work and back home. And 200 feet in front of me, you can no longer see the vehicles. And on top of not having the visibility, the homes on that road in the summertime are covered in dust. I mean, these houses are wet from the dust. So I could only imagine what it would be like if someone wanted to open their window to get some fresh air into their house. So I think my time is up. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Board members, we have one presentation to do, and that will be presented by Supervisor Letourneau for recognition of Diwali 2015. So if you want to join him down in front.
This is actually the 4th year now that Loudoun County has officially recognized Diwali, and some of you have joined us for previous celebrations. Diwali this year is officially, I believe, the 11th of November, but the celebrations are starting. I received my first invitations to some parties, so I figured we don't want to be behind it, we want to be ahead of it. And so that is why we kind of rushed the resolution this evening. We have with us some representatives of 2 temples that the Indian community in Loudoun County attend, which is the Babs Temple, represented by Varesh Desai and Nihal Jain, and the Vedic Temple in Sterling, represented by Pani Srinivasta. Okay. Perry Devray and Dr. Krishna Maradiju. Okay. Thank you. So first, I'd like to present to you and read to you the resolution that the Board of Supervisors has passed this evening. It reads, Resolution of Recognition, Diwali Holiday 2015. Whereas Diwali, also known as the Festival of Lights, is the biggest and most celebrated holiday in the Hindu calendar, and whereas Diwali is celebrated annually by Hindus, Sikhs, and Jains throughout the United States, and whereas Diwali originated as a harvest festival that marked the end of the growing season before winter, and whereas the word Diwali is a shortened version of the Sanskrit term Deepavali, which means a row of lamps, and whereas Diwali is celebrated for 5 nights every October or November, where celebrants light small oil lamps, place them around the home, and pray for health, knowledge, and peace, and whereas Diwali celebrates the victory of good over evil, light over darkness, and knowledge over ignorance. Whereas Diwali is observed by many Indian Americans in Loudoun County and will be celebrated on November 11, 2015. And whereas Loudoun County's population includes many Indian Americans, and whereas Indian Americans have made significant contributions to our communities in Loudoun County, including in our schools, sports, volunteerism, and in business. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the Loudoun County Board of Supervisors and all the citizens of Loudoun County recognize the many contributions Indian Americans make to our community and do hereby wish Indian Americans a festive and enjoyable Diwali celebration. This is a message that, regardless of one's religion, I think we can all take to heart. Can you just share with us a little bit about what the celebration is like?
So Diwali is mainly celebrated in India to victory of good over the evil. So, and then when we light the lamps and the diyas, we call, it is removes the darkness. That means, again, you're filled with lightness and light. That is a positiveness, and removing the negativeness and filled with positiveness. That is the significance, and we all believe in that, and it's happened to be in everybody's policy is the same, right? Everybody believe in the same, that victory of good over the evil. Thank you.
I'd like to... Anyone else? Who...
Board of Supervisors, I'm Dr. Krishna Madhiraju. I'm a pediatrician. I moved to Loudoun in 2011. It's a great honor to be here that all of you have unanimously voted, and we want to thank each one of you for bringing this legislation and, you know, having recognizing this festival. It really means a lot to the community. As an immigrant coming into the country, like we feel like it's a great honor, you know, to be recognized that this something like this does exist, and it's something that the whole community will feel very proud of. And when people decide to move to Loudoun, you would see that if you look at the statistics, there are several, there's a large influx of immigrants, especially Indian immigrants, coming into this community. And it was not like that, you know, several years ago. And part of the reason is we feel home. We feel home. The policies are changing. Whatever you take addition, and schools are wonderful. We want to thank you. The funding for schools are good. The roads are, I mean, I know there are always complaints. Yes, sir. Yes, I have lived in other parts of the country. I have lived in Louisiana. I have lived in New York. I have lived, you know, like in different parts of Louisiana also. But we are blessed to have good roads, and I think we have a working system here. And we feel very privileged and happy. As immigrants, again, I mean, I have been here for 20 years, but still, when I travel to different parts of the country and see, we should be proud of what we have here, and we should be thankful for what we have here. The schools are one of the best. I have offices in Prince William County. I have offices in Fredericksburg. In Stafford, the school system is way ahead, and it doesn't happen overnight. It comes with hard work from this, you know, group of leaders, and I think we need to take a moment to appreciate these leaders and be thankful. Of all the so many things we are thankful to you, this is an additional thing that we are thankful to you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Congratulations.
Happy Diwali to everyone. As the doctor just said, the entire speech about the immigration and Indian Americans moving to Loudoun County, I just want to recognize the chairman, York. You've been a leader for this county. Under your leadership, we have seen the growth in Loudoun County for last two decades. And thank you for your service, and not only to you, but the folks who are surrounded with you, making a team and setting a role model here in Loudoun County. So appreciate recognizing Diwali, and thank you, Mr. Latona, for making that happen. I've been here, this is the fourth time I'm coming here, so I'd love to continue that tradition. My kids will follow soon, but thank you very much for your service.
Thank you. Let me go ahead and present.
What'd you say?
All right, board members, let us go to item number 8, opening Kincaid Boulevard extension. I am going to move that the Board of Supervisors direct staff to send a letter to the town of Leesburg requesting their reconsideration of the previously adopted resolution preventing the opening of Kincaid Boulevard to traffic for access to Cross Trail Boulevard, and request that the town council pass a resolution to allow the road to be open to vehicular traffic.
Second.
Motion has been made, seconded by Supervisor Reed. I have no opening other than to say it is time to allow traffic to move. Mr. Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have some concerns about this. And the reason I have concerns about this are twofold. We don't have any input from the citizens on this, or they even know that this might be coming, which I think is a problem, the people that live there. The other issue that, in digging around on this a little bit, the traffic study that we did that talks about an additional 400 cars a day or 400 trips a day, that traffic study was done with the inclusion of Segment B. Open 2020. Well, Segment B is not going to be open. So there is no alternate routes for anybody to get out of there, and we're going to see traffic coming through Kincaid Boulevard because there's no Segment B that was used in the traffic study. So I really think that perhaps before we move on this, we get some input from the citizens and we maybe do another traffic study with the proper roads open in the study so that we can make an intelligent decision. Thank you.
Mr. Reed.
Thank you very much. The 2011 resolution from the town council, which you see, I actually voted for and helped write when I was on council. It was done at a time before we knew what the construction schedule would be for the Sicklin Road overpass. It was done at a time when there was no real traffic data regarding the Cross Trail Boulevard study. And so the community was concerned about a deluge, and this urban legend has sort of continued. And I have done a lot of outreach the last 3 years to let them know about this study by MCV consultants. They extracted data, which essentially shows that Kincaid Boulevard baseline is carrying about 2,100 cars a day. And if you open up segment A1 only, and that's the segment that's key, that's Kincaid Boulevard, isn't it, staff? That's the segment we're talking about. It adds 450 cars, and this road is a four-lane divided road. It has a design speed, I think, of at least 40 miles per hour, maybe 50, four-lane divided road. The segment that Mr. Higgins, that was so therefore, that's if you open it in 2030. So if anything, what we should be doing, if there's no objection, is asking staff to provide some recent data and what the projections would be if the road were opened, let's say, within 2 years. So this is my community. I fully support this. I would not have gone into asked the board in 2012 to put in this money to try to accelerate this project if I did not think it was going to do some good. And it's going to be the community that will be using it primarily. And that's why the traffic increases are really not much. The council will have to make a decision, and I hope they make it based on data and not based on fear. And that's what often happens in Leesburg, is that you have roads that are barricaded based on fear, and communities try to keep them barricaded because they're concerned about traffic volume. Well, what has happened? When we lifted the barricades on Catoctin Circle, it has had no problem whatsoever for that community. They've had traffic calming. It's been wonderful, perfectly fine. The town could institute traffic calming. It could lower the speed limit. It could do any number of things. It's a town road. So I support this letter. I applaud Mr. York for bringing this item to the board, and I would urge my colleagues to support it. And I have copies of this data if you would like to see it. Thank you.
Further discussion on the motion? All right. Just closing comments. Board members, if you just pull the satellite up of this road, there's not one single driveway off this road. This is no different situation than many other communities are. And all we do is we force traffic from one area onto somebody else. And it's time to start opening up our community so that we can get traffic and flowing. It's not going to be a great deal of traffic on this particular road. And again, I would feel a little bit more sympathy if the fact that there were a lot of driveways off this particular boulevard, but there is not. There's not a single one. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
That motion will carry 8-1 with Mr. Higgins opposed. And our next item, board members, is 15G, which is nonprofit organizations request for property tax exemption by designation. And I will turn this over to the chair of the Finance Committee, Supervisor Letourneau.
Thank you. The Finance Committee considered additional requests for property tax exemptions by designation and recommended that two organizations be included. I'll go ahead and make the motion and move it. My practice has been to abstain from this item because I opposed lifting the nonprofit designations in the first place, but so that the board can have the discussion. I move the recommendation of the Finance, Government Services, and Operations Committee that the Board of Supervisors forward Mobile Hope Association and Oatlands, Inc. that were forwarded by the Commissioner of Revenue as shown in Attachment 1 to a board public hearing.
Motion has been made and seconded. Further opening, Ms. Ludwig?
No opening.
All right. Mr. Bonfields.
Good evening. I'd like to make a friendly amendment, and I know that two that were not initially supported by the committee. I wasn't on the committee at the time, but I'd like to add Faith and Family Foundation and Ashby Ponds.
Are you asking for a friendly amendment?
I am asking for a friendly amendment.
Will that
Chairman.
Be accepted? No. Okay. So it's not accepted by the maker of the motion. Do you wish to make it as a formal motion to amend?
I would like to make it as a formal motion to amend.
Okay. Is there a second? All right. I will second that. And you have opening comment to your motion to amend.
Since I was not part of the committee, I didn't have time. I wasn't part of the initial process. I did collect all the documentations and look through them. Most everybody on this board knows I've had extensive experience with 501c3 corporations, chairing and treasurer of many. So I knew my way around the documents, and I personally feel that these two have merit and are deserving of going to the next phase in this process, which is the public hearing.
Okay. Mr. Bonnet?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Wirtz. One of our criteria for this is that it has a very direct benefit to Loudoun citizens, and specifically Loudoun citizens, not a broad benefit like some of them we didn't include, benefit people worldwide like Wikimedia. But can you tell me the core functions of Faith and Family Foundation and how they relate directly to the benefits of Loudoun citizens?
You'll notice that question is answered in Attachment 4 for each of the organizations.
Yeah, unfortunately, attachments are a link that I can't get to right now.
Oh, okay. Services provided for the common good of the public. The organization's purpose is to provide healing and hope to children and adults with disabilities and their families by providing adaptive and respite programs and services to meet their physical, social, and emotional needs, and to provide practical assistance to overcome obstacles in their home and community life. The substantial and direct benefits to Loudoun County citizens is therapeutic riding, wheelchair and adaptive equipment lending and repair program, adaptive hair salon, community-based instruction programs for Loudoun County Public Schools special education classes, family respite days, and inclusion summer camps. Does the organization provide services exclusively to Loudoun County residents? And the answer from the applicant was no. It includes Northern Virginia as well.
Okay, thanks. That answered my question.
Okay. Further discussion, Mr. Reed.
I have no problem with this. I was a little concerned about Ashby. I was going to ask for division, but we're giving something to Falcons Landing. They're a CCRC. Mr. Wirtz and I discussed this last night actually, and he advised me that there's two different entities. Falcons Landing is owned by a nonprofit, and Erickson is a for-profit, so they own the community, so they're not eligible for any kind of real property exemption. And I'm confident in this Faith and Freedom group that they will do some good for the county, just like the Wounded Warrior Retreat. I mean, originally there was some concern about what are they going to do for the county, and they've stepped up to the plate, and they've been working with our veterans groups and so forth. So it's a small amount. I have no problem with it.
I just want to, for clarity, are you asking for division or not of the question? Okay. Ms. Volpe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I actually had the opportunity to do some research and meet with Mr. Wirtz and his staff. I would like division.
Okay.
Thank you.
Further discussion, and we'll go ahead and take up on the question Ashby Bonds first and then Faith and Family Foundation. Ms. Clark.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since the motion is only to send this to a future public hearing, I will support this motion to send the item to a future public hearing. We'll see where this goes with the division.
Okay, very good. Further comment? All right. Then what we will do is vote to amend the main motion. And the first part will be whether to include Ashby Ponds, Inc. All in favor signify. I apologize, maker of the motion. You do have last word. Anything you want to add?
I'm fine. Let's go with the motion.
Okay. All in favor to add Ashby Ponds, Inc. Signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Let me see hands on no's. Okay. I believe that motion then will fail 3-6 with Mr. Reed, Mr. Bonfils, and the chairman in support. Now, okay, you said no. And no was opposed. Okay, gotcha. Then that motion still failed 4-5. Mr. Higgins as a yes. All right, so we are to Faith and Family Foundation, Inc. All in favor to forward that to the public hearing process, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Let me see hands on no's. I think I just heard 3. That motion will carry 6-3-1. No, that's wrong, 5-3-1. Let me see the hands on the nose again. Just make, I think it was Ms. Volpe, Mr. Letourneau, and then Mr. Delgadio that were no, and Ms. Clark abstained from the vote. The main motion has been amended to include Faith and Family Foundation, Inc. Further discussion on the main motion. Mr. Reed.
Yes. I will be supporting this for the public hearing. But frankly, I'm extremely concerned with some of these nonprofits, and I look forward to there being criteria. And I believe, Mr. Wirtz, we did work that out, that you are supposed to come up with criteria, not before the public hearing, but before the budget, correct?
Actually, I believe that county administration, I agreed to work with them on developing criteria.
Not just for future nonprofits.
Prior to the budget.
But for prior
to the budget.
But for every nonprofit. Retroactive?
No. If I may just remind folks, there's only 3 going forward under this motion. Faith and Family Now, Oaklands, Inc., and Mobile Hope.
I understand that.
Okay, just want to make sure.
I understand that. But I just wanted to reiterate that it was my understanding, Mr. Chairman, at the Finance Committee, that there was support for criteria to be developed after the public hearing. And I want to make sure that is for all the nonprofits, or is it just for the ones that have applied this year? I think that it's for all of them. And the reason why it should be for all of them is because I frankly have been doing some personal research on Prison Fellowship, Jack Kent Cook Foundation, and I was opposed to this IJIS Institute last year. It's another trade group just like the ones that we rejected at Finance and did not go forward with tonight. And I would really urge us to get some history about why they have these exemptions. I think you will find that the Cook Foundation made a promise to Loudoun County to give scholarships to Loudoun students, and they have not done that, at least not recently. And Prison Fellowship, I also have some concerns with what they're doing. If they're doing something with the Sheriff's Department or Leesburg Police, I'm not aware of it. But I will not be on this board, but I can tell you right now, we have opened up a can of worms with the situation last year, and we should have had criteria. And I think that it would have been a lot better if we did have criteria. I thought we had it in the application process, but we didn't have it actually in the review, which is a shame. And I would encourage my colleagues to really take a hard look at this, because like Mr. Letourneau, I'm very concerned. I'm willing to give some, but I think that we have really we have to look at some of these, and those three in particular, I believe, need to be looked at very closely about what they do for Loudoun County. Thank you.
I think you are comparing apples with oranges. First of all, the stuff when we opened this back up, we did develop criteria, and that's kind of why we're here, and that's why we're down to three out of the seven that applied for this. Now, the second question that you bring up is totally different, and that is for those existing that we have not reviewed, and if the board wishes to develop criteria, that is really, I think, a separate motion from this. This is just a motion to send these forward based on our criteria to a public hearing. Further discussion, Ms. Volpe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My concern about the organization that was added is some of the background information we did not have. I actually saw a brochure, only saw, you know, a few children in it, that type of thing. I would like, before the public hearing, if at all possible, to find out what the costs are associated with sending your child, you know, to the facility. You know, what type of accreditation do they have for, say, the therapeutic riding and some of the other programs that they're doing? And basic things like the number of children and how many of those children are Loudoun County residents, because it's, you know, all of Northern Virginia. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Further discussion, closing comments, Mr. Letourneau.
Well, for the benefit of the board, there is an item coming back to the Finance Committee as a result of the Finance Committee discussions on this regarding standards for evaluation for these items, because the concern that I had when we first did this was we didn't have any objective way to compare items, and it turned into a very subjective situation, and then we had a whole incident with one particular one of these that wanted it and then didn't want it, and, you know, so one of the things that came up in the Finance Committee discussion was a desire for any organization that receives an exemption to be a direct benefit to Loudoun County, exclusively, or at least in a way that was unique to Loudoun County. I'm not so sure that one of these that we just put on the public hearing agenda meets that criteria. I don't think it does. But that was a discussion that we had at the Finance Committee, and that is why the recommendations that were made out of the committee. So I think that will be handled. It won't be in time for this process, and that's why this process was moving. And the criteria process is going to be moving separately, but it could be used for both existing and new applications in a future budget or a future discussion regarding exemptions. So, yes, Mr. Wirtz.
Mr. Chairman and Supervisor Letourneau, I do want to clarify, the Code of Virginia already spells out the criteria that localities are supposed to be looking at, and that is included in Attachment 4. And you will see the summary of that information for each of these organizations spelled out in that. And I will reference 58.1.3651B of the Code of Virginia, and that is what is spelled out in there as to what city councils and county governing bodies are to look to before they grant an exemption. And we are doing that. No, that's what's in this attachment here.
There's still a policy decision for the board to make about which organizations you want to grant exemptions to, not whether they're technically eligible.
Okay.
So that's what I mean.
I just wanted to be clear that it's not that there is no criteria at all. It already exists in the Code of Virginia.
I think we all get that these wouldn't be in front of us unless they were technically able to be considered by the board. But that's not the question. The question is on the subjective decision that the board has to make. Okay.
All right. All in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Abstain?
Abstain.
All right. That motion, I believe, will carry 6-1-2. Mr. Delgatti opposed, and then Ms. Letourneau, Ms. Clark, abstaining from the vote. Board members, the last potential action item that we have is one that was added to the agenda earlier, which I'll call item number 16. It's inside the, or excuse me, I-66 inside the Beltway enforcement. We had the public hearing last week that VDOT held in Ashburn with respect to the tolling of I-66 and the other changes that are coming forward. One of the things that Mr. Letourneau brought forward and had a little discussion by some others was the lack of enforcement of HOV2 in the corridor. So I was going to write the governor and the Secretary of Transportation that we have received testimony from members who use this corridor that there is a lack of enforcement, which lack of enforcement is causing congestion problems, and kind of suggest that perhaps that they do a period of enforcement and see what happens in the corridor. So I was just coming to the board to ask if you all wish to be signatories to such letter, and if so, I'll go ahead and suspend the rules to make a motion. Suspension has been requested or motioned and seconded by Supervisor Bona. Discussion, seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? That motion will carry unanimously. And board members, I'll make a motion that the chairman on behalf of the board write a letter to the governor, the and the Secretary of Transportation regarding concerns about the lack of enforcement for HOV2 on I-66 and the corridor, and would request that enforcement would be beefed up for a period of time to see what results would be ascertained and to see if it would actually drive down the number of cars using 66 during rush hour.
Second.
Motion's been made, seconded by Supervisor Letourneau. Discussion, Mr. Letourneau.
Yeah, can we either also add or just perhaps copy the superintendent of the state police on
that?
Yes,
that would be fine.
I think this was an interesting topic, and it was interesting to hear VDOT's response when it was raised by myself and by a few others, and that essentially they said they were maxed out on enforcement. And I'm telling you, I drive 66 inside the Beltway every day, and I would say maybe 1 or 2 days out of 5, there's a state trooper there, and there's maybe one state trooper there that is enforcing a single car at a time, as dozens are flying past that are routinely violating. There are some spots at the Dulles Access Road where you can tell where traffic is coming from, either the airport traffic or the local traffic. The airport traffic is allowed to be single rider, and so those cars are fine, but the traffic coming from the Dulles toll road is not. There either have to be HOV or a clean special fuel plate prior to 2011, and so you can tell, and they could be enforcing a lot more. It's become a running joke among many people I know in D.C. to see, to kind of play the game. The enforcement is only at ramps once you get inside the Beltway, and so it's very easy for people just to sneak on. So I think this is a very good idea, and I would also be very interested to see how much the volume would actually decrease, because they're saying that the whole reason for this project is because the volume is just exceeding anything that they can manage. And so let's see what happens. They're estimating as many as 25, 35, 40% are violators. So that would make a pretty big dent in volume right away.
All right. Further discussion. Mr. Reed.
I support this. I would also, I guess you don't want to add to the letter about maintaining the HOV allowance for this project for hybrid vehicles, because there was some interest in that.
I specifically just want to address the enforcement issue.
You know, enforcement could be done very easily with cameras. I know we can't have, Mr. Rogers, I know, but we can't have speed cameras, we can't have red light cameras in Virginia, but is there anything that would prevent cameras taking pictures of people coming on and off 66 in non-hybrid cars driving solo? Or is there, or you need legislation for that?
Yeah.
Mr. Reed, I'm not sure what the purpose would be of taking those pictures, but you're taking pictures in a public place, so I don't see the need for legislation.
Yeah, you see, I think that the idea is to take a picture and then send somebody a fine.
No, sir, you would need legislation.
Yeah, you see, and so therefore, maybe, Mr. Letourneau, you and I can work on something for our legislative agenda in that regard, because there is technology that exists that can help with the enforcement, because what's going to happen, the state police will come back saying, we don't have the resources. Well, yeah, maybe you don't, but they do it in Maryland. They take a picture of your license plate, and they can certainly take a picture of the front of the car, and they see there's one person driving in the car, if that technology exists, and sending them a fine. So maybe that's something that we could look at outside of this letter. Thank you.
Further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is unanimous. Let's just, board members, our last item are board comments and disclosures. And I know Ms. Volpe has an appointment, so I'll allow her to go first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be quick. On the 8th of October, I attended Loudoun Water's Grinder Pump Community Informational Meeting, which was very helpful because they've established a new set of criteria. I'm saying this for my colleagues who in different locations in the county have grinder pump systems. So if your communities haven't been made aware of the changes in the maintenance and repairs for the grinder pump systems, you should check with Loudoun Water. On the 10th of October, I attended the Baha'i Center International Day of Peace event. On the 13th of October, I attended the iFly groundbreaking ceremony. And on the 14th of October, I participated in a class visit from the Patrick Henry College government class, which, of course, also attended the public hearing to see us in action. On the 15th of October, I attended the Inova Ashburn Healthplex ribbon cutting ceremony. Also on the 15th, I attended the One Loudoun groundbreaking for their senior assisted living housing facility by a company called Tribute. And on the 17th of October, attended the Cascades Fall Festival, which had record attendance. On the 18th of October, I attended the Potomac Metals grand opening party over in the Dulles Trade West development. It is an amazing, huge facility that they have constructed. Let's just say much larger than their property they have over there on Woodland Road. And I would like to greatly thank you all for supporting on consent item number 5, the Sugarland Run Drive curb ramps and crosswalks. This we approved tonight, the last piece of that project, to ensure children will get to school safely in the Meadowland Elementary School area. And also the traffic calming measure, item number 6, in the Heather Glen subdivision. We're literally dealing with a child who is blind, so it's very important to have those signs put in. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir. I first wanted to thank the Leesburg community and various folks here who issued condolences regarding the death of my mother-in-law, Val Gardiani, who died last Monday, Columbus Day, at a nursing home here in Leesburg. She lived with us for the last 8 years and on and off for the 8 years prior to that after her husband passed away, and she was very much part of our family, and we had a nice service for her in Connecticut, and again, my thanks to all of you who issued condolences. And many thanks to the Indian American community for their Diwali celebration. That was really nice tonight. Indian Americans have added so much value to our community and to this country. And I look forward to maybe going to visit one of those celebrations. I will be posting something on my Facebook page about that when I get the dates. This is the last board meeting prior to the election, November 3rd, and I just feel a need to comment on some of these quote-unquote issues that the loyal opposition is raising in the campaign. It was always my thought that the issues that matter the most to people are things like traffic, schools, taxes, jobs, environment maybe. You know, there's a lot of big issues out there, and instead what I see out there, at least in the media, is, you know, making a big deal about spending $60,000 to inform the public about transportation projects in the next year as if that's some kind of a waste of money. Well, you know, I did the same mailing for my district 2 years ago. Nobody raised a concern. In fact, people in Leesburg loved it. They loved the fact that I had a chart. I showed the timetable for construction for various projects. It cost $6,000. So if you multiply that by 8 magisterial districts and consider the fact that this was a larger product, $60,000 is a very, very, very good price. So, you know, the voters should recognize that this Board of Supervisors, for one, has saved $12 million in other post-employment benefits, thanks to the leadership of Mr. Bona, $12 million. Buy-right schools with performance standards, that saved maybe $2 to $3 million just in the regulatory process, and there's a lot more. And now to the issue of this power line issue down in Dulles South, or what did the supervisors know and when did they know it? Well, you know, this, I can't believe the newspapers printed this long-winded diatribe for this fellow who's the who says he's the Dulles South Democratic Club chairman, who takes a couple of words that one of my colleagues makes in a community forum and tries to show that somehow he was asleep at the wheel on this. Well, the fact is that he and Supervisor Clark were very much out front on this, and they've been very active in coming up with better alternatives. That's what your supervisor is supposed to do. And then there's this other issue of nitpickiness on attendance records and this and that. And then the one candidate who felt it was necessary to put in the paper that he was not on the Ashley Madison list. I mean, really, you know, as I look at this, I got to say this. This is the worst slate of Democratic candidates for local office I have ever seen. I mean, we're dealing with people with maybe only one or two exceptions who have been involved with local issues. And my advice to Ms. Randall, please take your signs down on Ashburn Farm Parkway because they're not supposed to be in the media. And I don't know if we'll see a letter to the editor about that. I mean, the Washington Post, of course, ran Mr. Flannery's picking on my colleagues for having signs out. Well, that's what you're supposed to do in an election. And they're all legally placed and they're all legally sized. I won't get into the constitutional officers because that's probably even worse, but I have to have my partisan moment here, and I say that my colleagues here on the board who are running for re-election and they're Republicans who are running to replace people like me and Ms. Clark deserve election to the board. Polls are open 6 a.m. to 7 p.m. There will be absentee voting, as you heard from Mr. Hemstreet, on the 24th and I believe the 30th at the Board of Elections. I think there's also voting at the Senior Center. Vote based on what the person has done, not fabricated issues that are being blown out of proportion, like this full-day kindergarten thing. I forgot about that, too. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Delgadio?
I delivered many thousands of flyers, as you may have heard from me before. I mailed a newsletter to every home. Of course, I emailed on it, and Sterling Fest was the best it's ever been. I believe Mr. York, my colleague who serves as chairman, handed out a truckload of York peppermint patties all day. I enjoyed them many times. I think I passed by at least 10 times, and we were very festive that day. The parade was fantastic. The weather was great. Many other officials were there. Very grateful to the sponsors of the parade, which are both the Elks and the Knights of Columbus. They were fabulous hosts for that event, and of course there were hot dogs afterwards for everyone at the barn, which is now owned by the Elks. Also want to give credit to the Sterling Foundation. The Sterling Foundation, of course, I promoted in my newsletter. It is a nonprofit. It takes the place of the Homeowners Association and services Sterling Boulevard. They have done an upgrade in terms of their membership. They're always looking for more membership. So they're putting out signs, and they're cleaning the gutters and doing all the things that a homeowners association would do, but with very little in the way of a budget. So membership in the Sterling Foundation is $20. And they're along with the Sterling Playmakers, another nonprofit, and the community center. The people who were involved with the county helped start Sterling Fest many years ago, and all those officials who have seen what Sterling Fest has become, together with the parade, it is a very important community outreach that the county has cooperated with, many of the departments, and I'm very grateful to say that this really has been the best Sterling Fest in many years, and thankful, I'm very thankful for everybody who helped out with that on a volunteer basis. Gene and Willie West, although they are Democrats, they were very, very, very generous with their time, thousands of hours putting this together and making it a very successful event. I want to say there's a letter, there's going to be a 25-mile-an-hour limit on Williamsburg Road, and we're going to put a $200 fine through board action for anyone speeding on Williamsburg Road. There's going to be a $200 fine on Argonne Road, and that will, those signs will also be put in place for speeding above 25 miles an hour. I want to thank the board on the record and the county administrator and the county attorney and everyone else who was involved with the signing of the new lease in the shopping center on Columbus Day. I know that that was a great signing, a great historic event for Sterling, and another hallmark of this Board of Supervisors to get things done sooner rather than later. That had been delayed for various corporate reasons, not related to anything other than that. And finally, that signing took place on Columbus Day for the lease, for the 20-year lease for the library, the new library in Sterling. I want to say that the neighborhood where the house was, that we, I call it the zombie house on Brandon Road. I still getting feedback on that. Thank you again to the board for taking care of that home, which had been abandoned and was an eyesore in destroying the entire level of prosperity in that area. And the sinkhole that was fixed, people are still dancing in celebration of that sinkhole that was completely repaired in the back of the shopping center and repairing the county facility, the county stormwater facility, for a cost of many, many hundreds of thousands of dollars. Thank you, board members. Thank you, colleagues. Thank you, staff.
Ms. Clark?
I'm fine. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Letourneau?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So coming up next week, October 27th and 29th, are the public hearings on the power lines. There's one on the 27th is here in the Government Center. The one on the 29th is at Freedom High School at 6 p.m. I do want to mention, I hopefully won't take my full 5 minutes, but there have been some allegations made in several of the media outlets regarding my involvement with the power lines and when the county knew and when the county did not know that there were power lines planned down Route 50. The Loudoun Times has published a letter from me that I saw today that outlines and discusses the timeline by which both Supervisor Clark and I were informed about this project and exactly the level of detail that we had. The reality is, while Dominion first made contact with the county last August, they did not at any time present a plan that was a final plan to put power lines down Route 50. In fact, the initial contact from Dominion said only that they were studying an area roughly from Brambleton almost to Prince William County for the purposes of adding transmission. There were no details about why, and there were certainly no details about the route. In late October, Loudoun County Department of Planning, Julie Pastor at the time, the director, sent a letter back to Dominion essentially saying the county cannot give you much feedback on what you're asking for because you haven't defined the study area. You haven't told us what you're trying to do. You haven't told us where you need to do it and even where you need to go. And that was the situation throughout the fall. Eventually, we were able to piece some of this together. I caught wind of the fact that several properties in my district were being sold and likely to develop as data centers. But we had not had a situation where a single data center project required transmission capacity like this. And so it just was not in anybody's thought process at the time that this was really what this was about. In February, really, is when it became clear that Dominion was working on something like this. And from that time, there was a significant amount of communication from myself, from Supervisor Clark. We talked about it at these meetings, about what was happening and encouraging the public to get involved, including a public input session. I also need to say that typically, the public input sessions on these projects are the beginning of the public process. They are not the end. And in both my private and public discussions with Dominion, what was asserted to me was that the public's input would be taken into consideration before any routes were proposed. That was the purpose of having the public meeting April 29th in South Riding. And Dominion received, although turnout wasn't large, there were still many property owners. I remember Supervisor Clark was there. I know I was there. And several board members from area HOAs, as well as the Dulles South Alliance, and all of us had the same message, which was stay off of Route 50, be careful about these properties that are developing. You need to try to find a way to work with us to not impact their development. And we were told that all of that would be taken into account. On May 20th, Dominion actually filed their application, which now, looking back, tells me, given the scope and the extensive work that goes into those applications, the decision must have already been made to propose what they were proposing prior to the public input session. There's really no other explanation. And that is a very, very unfortunate. And so since that time, we've been fighting the power lines very hard. There's an outstanding coalition that's been formed. There's been over 4,000 signatures on a petition. And now that's all leading up to the public hearings next week. But that's my level of involvement. I have no incentive whatsoever to work to try to improve the Route 50 corridor for 4 years, only to sit on information that I may have had, which I didn't have, regarding a plan like this. And so it's unfortunate that that type of politics has gotten interjected into this. This is a powerful issue. There is a lot of opposition in South Riding and Stone Ridge. I understand why my opponent might want to try to take advantage of that, but the facts don't support that. Thank you very much.
All right. Mr. Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the 8th of October, I attended the Loudoun Water Board meeting to watch them discuss the rate structure for communal systems. On October 14th, I attended the Communications Commission meeting. On the 16th, I met with staff to discuss the Luckett's Fire Station. And on the 20th, which was yesterday evening, I was here for the Planning Commission meeting, and the item that I think finally hit the docket at around 11 o'clock, and that was the commission permit for the new system at Selma and Raspberry, and it was passed 9-0, and I'd like to thank the folks on the Planning Commission for that. I want to thank the staff in the county government here for all their work on it and at Loudoun Water. So I feel like we're moving in the right direction on that, definitely, and want to just ride herd on it till it's all finished. And like Yogi said, it ain't over till it's over. So we're staying with it. Couple other items I'd like to mention briefly. The Loudoun Museum is sponsoring their hauntings this weekend. And if you haven't done that, it's a great opportunity to tour Leesburg and some of the old historic sites and some of the ghost stories that go with them. So I'd encourage you to check that out. And then last but not least, I think everybody here is aware that the Waterford Fair was canceled on October 2nd through the 4th. And what that has done to the Waterford Foundation is put them in about a $450,000 hole because of the money they put out for the fair and then the revenue that they didn't receive back. And so I have met with them and I'm working with them, and I wanted to let you all know once I get all the numbers to maybe sit down and try to look at something to help them at least seed money to get started next year, because they self-finance, and this was money, this was not money that they had borrowed, but it was their money, cash money that they put up front that is gone, and then the revenue's gone as well. So maybe there's something that can be done to help them next year, but I wanted to bring that to your attention, that I will be coming back with specifics before too long. With that, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I am finished.
Very good. Mr. Bonfields?
There, I found the mic. So on Wednesday, October 14th, I met with Lou Conico and Christopher Consultants, as well as staff, to discuss Lerner's application, ZMAP 2015, 0015, Dulles 28 Center. We met with them to attempt to resolve a couple of issues. First, the right-of-way First, a right-in and right-out turn lane that was approved by Planning Commission, but is not likely to ever be approved by or built allowed to be built by VDOT because it would conflict with both traffic flow on Pacific Boulevard and Stormwater Pond at the upcoming Waxpool Intersection Improvement Project. Second, we discussed the donation of the needed rights-of-way and easements for the upcoming Waxpool project. The meeting went well, and I hope by the public hearing in November 12th, we will have good news to report on both fronts. On Friday, October 16th, Chairman York and I met with Syed Alam Wail Al-Karo and Robert Morrow of the Adams Center to discuss both the SBEX 2014-0009 and the current issues with parking at their Bowmead campus. On Monday the 19th, I met with Scott Sawaski and Chris Villa of Ashby Pond to discuss their tax exemption request. And that's all I have to report.
All right, very good. Mr. Bonnet?
And briefly, just one disclosure. On Thursday, 16 October, I met with Chris and Logan and Tiggity to listen to their vision on the development of their land around the Loudoun Gateway Station. I want to wish all my colleagues the best and good luck. 12 days to go. And I'd say we should take the day after the election off, but we have a board meeting, so I guess there won't be much break in that, but good luck to everybody. It's been a couple weeks of just ribbon cuttings and groundbreakings and one after another, and I haven't attended them all, and I know Chairman York has, so I know you've wore out your shoes and your shovels doing this, but a couple notable ones in the area. We broke ground on the iFly indoor skydiving facility right next to Topgolf. There was a ribbon cutting on the Ashburn Innova Healthplex just this past week. We broke ground on the Route 7 Belmont Ridge Interchange the same day that we did broke ground on iFly, same morning. And tomorrow we're breaking ground on the Ashburn Village Boulevard Route 7 Interchange. There's some great things going on, and I commend the board. I think we've accomplished so much in the last 4 years, and we put a plan in place early on once we got through the budget and Metro, and we're beginning to see the fruits of that plan start to develop, and we're starting to see roads being built, and we're watching Metro start to come down the Greenway and the toll road, and you know, with all the, we're seeing the results of economic development. We had a 459% year-over-year increase in investment in the county in the past fiscal year. It amounted to $1.3 billion in that fiscal year, which is an all-time record for the county. So all those things we all campaigned on 4.5 years ago, they're all happening now. And I just hope the voters realize that, and I hope they stay the course, because the next board, while it's got some new challenges to face, it needs to stay the course with the strategic plan this board put in place, because I know the citizens, when I knock doors, are very, very happy to see these things getting done. So great job, everybody, and good luck in 12 days. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, board members. Friday, October 9th, I met with Chris Clemente and Maggie Parker from Comstock regarding Loudoun Station and a few issues that they are having there. Tuesday, October 13th, I met with Bill Collins and Greg Streets from Contrera Broadband regarding broadband issues within the county. And then I won't repeat the Friday, October 16th, which has already been disclosed in the meeting with the Adams Center folks. And then on Tuesday, October 20th, I had the opportunity to meet with Mark Powell, Bob Lundberg of Old 690 Brewery to talk about some of their concerns that they have. Board members, I want to wish everyone that is running for re-election as well best of luck to you coming up on the 3rd, and I am grateful that we're down to 13 days and soon to be 12, and it couldn't come fast enough. And campaigns are great, but when you get into those last 3 weeks, it gets really challenging keeping up with the calendar, and particularly when you got a county that's been doing so well and you do have a lot of ribbon cuttings and a lot of groundbreakings to attend. But it shows a county that is very prosperous, and well said, Mr. Bona, and the good things that we are doing and the course that we need to stay on going forward. And I look forward to seeing some of these transportation projects and the ribbon cuttings coming forward. None bigger for me than Gloucester Parkway in August of next year, because that's just going to open up so much for so many people and reduce the travel time and mileage for so many of us in that particular area, including the completion of Pacific Boulevard and Russell Branch. And probably in 17 around there will be big for that quadrant and many other projects that are going on throughout the county. Board members, that is it, other than to recognize today, if you didn't know, we did approve, actually I think it might be next board meeting, but we are going to not have the second board meeting in November. The public hearing in November has 16 items at this current time on it, so it will be one of those. I think we'll be able to get through it still fairly quickly with the items that are on it. So with that, we stand adjourned.